Hello, I'm Terrence McNally, and welcome to today's podcast. Award-winning investigative reporter Osha Gray Davidson has been covering the environment and politics for nearly 25 years. She's a correspondent for the online edition of On Earth magazine, On Earth, one word. He has published 5 books of nonfiction, co-wrote the screenplay for the IMAX documentary Coral Reef Adventure. He publishes The Phoenix Sun, a syndicated online news and analysis site covering solar power from the American Southwest. His latest book, as I said, is Clean Break, Germany's Energy Transformation and What Americans Can Learn from It. Welcome, Osha Gray Davidson, to Freeform.
Thanks very much. It's good to be with you.
Okay. I like listeners to get a feel for the people behind the work and the ideas. So tell us, just so people get a sense of you, briefly about your path to the work that you're doing today, and feel free to mention mentors or turning points or moments of decision.
Oh, boy. Let's see. I've been a freelance writer for many, many years, and I've written lots of different subjects, and so the energy one is somewhat new. I mean, it's in the past 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And I had written about race relations and race and class in America, gun control, and most recently I had written a couple of books about marine biology. I guess the only unifying thread in this is that these are projects that I thought were important, stories that were important, needed to be told, and interested me. And you asked about mentors or inspirations, and Studs Terkel, the great viewer, an oral historian, was a big one for me, just reading his books, listening to his interviews over the years, and then when I wrote a book called Best of Enemies about a friendship between a Klansman in North Carolina and a black community activist, how they got to be friends, Studs was kind enough to do a blurb for the book, and then I met him through that. So that was very exciting. But this opportunity, I mean, I live in Arizona, where solar should be on every roof, yet it's not. It's not on very many roofs at all, and it's increasing. But it's still more the exception than it is the rule. So it was very exciting to have the opportunity to go to Germany for Inside Climate News, and through grants from the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and the Bohl Foundation, a German-based Green Party-affiliated foundation, and spend 3 weeks traveling around there and see what a renewable energy economy looks like, that they're actually doing it, and see what it feels like to live for a short time in a society that is transitioning from carbon-based fuels to renewable fuels. And it was just an amazing experience.
And how much did you know before you went over, and how much were you surprised by what you learned and experienced?
I have to say, about Germany in particular, I knew very, very little. I had been writing some. I wrote for Forbes for a little while for their online site, and I was covering energy and new ideas in energy for them. So I was covering Fukushima, and when the German government, led by Angela Merkel, in 2011, in response to demonstrations in Germany against nuclear power right after Fukushima, when she just closed down several nuke plants, mostly ones that were already running, were already closed down for maintenance, refueling, things like that, and she just said they're not going to reopen. So I wrote about that then. But really, I knew in general terms that, yeah, they were doing something. Something was going on there. There was a lot of ferment, a lot of buzz about it, but it's totally different to actually go there and talk to the people who are activists in it, just people on the street, and with politicians from all parts of the political spectrum. And that was a fascinating part, because when we think of renewables, or at least when I do in the United States, it's generally linked with people on the left. And that's not the case in Germany at all. It really is not a predictor, if somebody has solar on their house, on the roof, or if they're a member of a cooperative that has solar or wind, that's no predictor of where they're going to fall on the political spectrum. It's just, it's not linked like that. And I found that was actually one of the more surprising parts of the things that I found when I was in Germany.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I mean, it makes sense that that would be surprising. We're so used to seeing these things. I mean, once one takes a step back, you say, why? You know, conservative, liberal, what does that have to do with anything? But it certainly falls that way in this country. Let me just tell people a statistic here, that a third of the world's installed solar capacity, a third of the world's installed solar capacity is currently found in Germany, a nation that gets roughly the same amount of sunlight as Alaska. Now, my guess is, and I think I read this, was that it wasn't just talking to people. It was also just as you rode a train or looked around, that just what you saw was so different from what you see even in sun-spangled Arizona.
Oh, absolutely. I did ride the train, took trains most of the time when I was in Germany, because that's another part of this whole story, is it's not just renewable energy, it's how energy is used, and transportation is a large part of that. They have a very well-developed mass transportation system there. So I was riding the trains, and at one point, I just thought, okay, this is ridiculous. It's like a Potemkin village that's been set up to confuse or amaze foreign press, because virtually every farmhouse and barn that we passed out in the countryside had solar panels on it, and at the same time, in the distance or close up, you could see there were wind turbines everywhere. It's just phenomenal that when you see the deployment of renewable energy there, and it's a much smaller country, both population and geographically, so everything's in
compressed
a smaller area. But even so, that's another part of what makes it such a both fascinating but also an inspirational.
Yeah. In other words, I think one of the things you're saying is, if they can do that without our wide open spaces, how much more could we do with our wide open spaces, right?
That's true. It works both ways. The wide open spaces, certainly, you know, you can have. We have a far greater wind potential in the U.S. than they have in Germany, and obviously, we have much better solar. At least the ability to gather a lot more solar power, but the distances that have to be traveled, that the power has to travel, makes it more expensive in the U.S.
Oh, right, right. No, it does work both ways. I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
So does hitting the goal of 80% renewable power by 2050 seem realistic at this point? As I pointed out in the introduction, in 2006, they were at 6%. Here we are, 2013, they're at 26%. Does the goal of 80% by 2050 seem achievable?
Well, it certainly seems so, particularly in light of the fact that Germany has been reaching its short-term goals faster than they had anticipated at each step of the way. They had set these 5-year, 10-year goals, and they've always surpassed them. And when I talked with, I think he was a spokesman for the economy of the Christian Democrat Party, which is the right-of-center party that's the ruling party of the coalition there. When I asked him about will they make their goal in 20, don't remember which goal, but when I asked him about will they reach it, he said, oh, we're going to go right by that goal, I think. So even from somebody on the right in Germany, he had full faith that they were going to go by it and that they will achieve 80% by 2050.
I'm speaking with Osha Gray Davidson, author of Clean Break, Germany's Energy Transformation and What Americans Can Learn From It. And you can learn more at Osha Davidson, that's OshaDavidson.com, and thephoenixsun.com, his site where he talks about renewables and solar and so on in light of the American Southwest. You point out that they've surpassed their intermediate goals so far. But if you'll allow me to mix metaphors, isn't it possible that they've picked the low-hanging fruit and the game will change as they get closer to the finish line? Doesn't it get harder to get from 50 to 80 than it does from 0 to 50?
That's a good question. Absolutely, it does. And people there, experts I talked to, mentioned that, you know, the first part of this was the easy part. Now it's going to get harder and harder. But they still have full faith that they're going to be able to do it. And they're instituting measures that will make it easier to do that. So part of one of the people I talked to there quite a bit is Hans Josef Fell, and he's a member of the parliament in Germany, and he's one of the architects. Actually, he's the main architect of the Renewable Energy Act that in 2000 really started this Energiewende, the energy revolution. And he said he, at one point I asked him about, do you think that you'll be able to get to 80% by 2050? Isn't that pretty ambitious? And he said, no, that's not ambitious at all. And in fact, he thinks that's understating it. He thinks 100% by 2050. Well, that may or may not be true, but he pointed out that when they were first starting out and their goal was 5%, then the goal was 10%, he said the people, the conventional wisdom was that, oh, you're not going to be able to reach that. So his point was, we've been hearing it from the very beginning that we won't be able to make all of these, any of these gains, and every time we've surpassed it. So if you go by the record, despite the fact that, yes, it's going to get harder, well, so we work harder. I mean, there's a very pragmatic approach to this in Germany that, yes, we know it's, they're very realistic about how hard it is, and they're, but they're very willing so far to keep moving in this direction.
Let me ask you this, because I think one of the big questions, of course, we're looking at, as I said, how they're able to move quickly, how the country is behind it and so on, and how things seem so stuck here. What do you think are the crucial factors in their success so far in terms of culture or in terms of politics and government? And I guess you could put maybe finance in there. And in terms of technology?
Well, technology I don't think is really a big, certainly not a determinative factor in this. But politically, one big difference is the control in politics or over politics by energy companies in the U.S. And they didn't have it to the same extent in Germany. That's certainly a big one. I think, you know, it's hard to pin down, and I think it's easy to talk about what the possible
differences are.
But I think that the main thing that needs to be focused on is that there was political will to do this, and whatever the problems are that come up, and it's going to be the same in some areas, but it's going to be different in different countries. But if there's a desire to do it, the take-home message from Germany is it's possible to move from a fossil fuel-based economy to a renewable energy-based one if there's public will to do it. In Germany, at the very beginning, there was opposition to changing to renewable energy. And I visited a small town in the Black Forest where they wanted to get away from nuclear power, dependence on nuclear power right after Chernobyl in the mid-80s. Their utility provider refused to just stop using nuclear power. And so they started a movement. It's a village of 2,000 people. They started a movement where they were trying to get enough money to buy the grid just in their area and set up their own solar panels so that they could produce their own electricity. Nobody thought it would be possible. It took them 10 years to do it, but they did it, and that, in some ways, was the beginning of the energy revolution in Germany. So it's really up to people to demand that, to work for what kind of energy system, what kind of government they want, and they accomplished it so far in Germany, They're continuing at it, despite...
And that OSHA, is the story, I think the folks you were talking about include the Zladex, am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so you tell the story that they started out as you say, following Chernobyl, and it becomes first a potent citizen group, but now it is an enormous green cooperative.
Right. It's, if not the largest green energy utility in Germany, it's one of the largest. And it's all based in this small town still in the Black Forest. And they, in Germany, you can buy your power from any power provider in the country. And there are about between 600 and 900. I mean, it varies depending on how you, what you consider the, a utility. But anybody can set these up, and you can buy power from a utility that's located on the far side of the country. So they have, what is it, over 100,000.
I think I read 180,000.
Yeah, so it's probably over 200,000 by this point.
Mm-hmm.
Members, so households and small businesses throughout Germany who buy their power through this tiny utility that started it out as just a citizens' movement.
In a village of 2,000.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. Let me tell people again, I'm speaking with Osha Gray Davidson, author of Clean Break, Germany's Energy Transformation and What Americans Can Learn From It. By the way, I call this a book. It's kind of a book. Tell people what it is and how they can get a hold of it, because this is a cheap to buy and short to read.
Right. It's a. It started out as a series of articles for InsideClimateNews.org, a website that writes about renewable energy and climate news, obviously. They sent me to Germany, and these appeared as a series of articles over several weeks in on their website, and then they were collected into a book, an e-book, with additional material, including links to all sorts of things, photographs, and extra stories in there about the trip. There's one chapter that I think is a really important chapter, that it's about a day I spent in Hamburg, Germany, just looking into their public transportation system, because so much of our CO2 comes from transportation, that by designing a really good public transportation system where 99% of the population lives within 300 meters, about 900 feet, of a public transportation stop, That's one of the keys to making a really low carbon society, and that's one
right.
chapter in it.
Right. Yeah, it's not just where you get your energy; it's how you use your energy.
Absolutely.
And so, how you use your energy allows you to get it differently and changes the finance, the financial equations of where you get it from, and so on.
It's wonderful because this includes so many different aspects of society. It's how you get the energy, how you use the energy, how you avoid using energy, but it's also who produces the energy. And as you pointed out, in Germany, over 50% of the electrical of electricity is produced, of renewable energy is produced by individuals, small businesses, and cooperatives. So it's there's an important lesson in democratizing power that the U.S. certainly could benefit from.
Yeah, I think that is one, as you pointed out, when I asked you what's the obstacle, you said perhaps the biggest political will obstacle is the domination by energy companies of politics in America. And then it becomes, once you break the logjam, once you begin movement, this thing for distributed, decentralized, interactive energy, if you will, where the energy you collect may go back into the grid, et cetera, is really the future. And America has to break that logjam first to begin to even move in that direction. Let me ask a couple of other big questions. We got about 3.5 more minutes, Osha. Is, just so people get their heads around this, is it command and control that's making this happen, or is it using the market?
It's actually the opposite of command and control. In the United States, most people get their electricity through a regulated monopoly, meaning that you have a governing board, a government board, that's setting the rates, the utility rates. Well, that's the opposite in Germany. In Germany, this is distributed power, where everybody can be a utility and everybody can buy power from wherever they want. So it's so funny because in the U.S. that question comes up all the time about Germany, about, well, this is a top-down government-controlled thing. It's the exact opposite. It's much more market-based than it is in the U.S.
That, in other words, what they did was they created a system or transformed their system so that there are incentives at every level to make the conversion, rather than here where so few incentives exist because of the stranglehold on the means of production and distribution.
Right. And in Germany, they have, I think it costs about half as much to install the same size electrical solar system on a house as it does, half as much in Germany as it does in the U.S. And that's because of free market forces that have been unleashed in Germany and that are stifled by monopolies in the U.S. It's truly an amazing thing.
Yeah. So if I give you 2 minutes, what can Americans do when they finish listening to this and they finish going? When I asked you about your book, you can find it at that web. You can find the essays at that website, correct?
InsideClimateNews.org.
Okay, but it can also be purchased as a Kindle single.
Right.
For less than a buck.
Right, on Amazon.
So if you go to Amazon and you look for Clean Break, you can get it for less than a buck. Besides that, what should listeners do to move this forward?
Well, there are all sorts of possibilities, and it depends on where people live. But what I generally tell people is to start getting in touch with whatever commercial consumer groups there are in their area and see what's available for being able to get move to renewable energy. And also look at their – we've got great access on the web now, through the web, to places, websites. Inside Climate News actually has lots of links to other places where you can go and figure out, well, what can I do to get the kind of system that's based on it's called a feed-in tariff. What can I do to get that here in the United States? There are very few places that have it here, but it's possible to do.
Okay, so we got to end the conversation right now, Osha. That website, yeah, for the last time is?
InsideClimateNews.org.
InsideClimateNews, one word, .org. You can also look at OshaDavidson.com and thePhoenixSun.com. You can listen to this week's conversation and many others anytime during the week by linking to the podcast. You can sign up to have it delivered to you weekly. You can do both of those things at iTunes and at my site, TerrenceMcNally.net, TerrenceMcNally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com, to the same site. There you can also find articles as well as information about my work with organizations, helping them develop stronger narratives and tell more compelling stories. Finally, if you want to receive my weekly email announcement telling you who's going to be on, what we're going to talk about, and 3 or 4 articles on the issues, you can sign up at my site or by emailing me at that same email address, temcnally@mac.com. You can also check out Free Forum with Terrence McNally on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at McNally Terrence. Thank you to Osha Great Davidson. Keep up the good work.